ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் வேர்ல்ட் இஸ் ஆஷ்ரம், சோல் மெச்சூரேஷன் பார்ட் 1, பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Going to read the publisher's desk this morning, the one you've heard already. Hopefully you'll find a new point in it that didn't quite sink in last time. Creating an audio file that, if all goes well, will be part of the Hinduism Today digital edition when it's formally launched April 1st. So the idea is we're creating a a downloadable edition of Hinduism Today that you can view on your own computer. And besides the printed magazine material, we're going to add certain extra features called rich media, which are starting with some audio files. So you can listen to the publisher's desk and not just read it, for example. Later on, we'll be a little more ambitious and we'll add some video files. But I want to start with something additional. So here we go. In Hinduism, we are fortunate to have many God-realized souls to guide us along the spiritual path. Their teachings are so profound and powerful that they penetrate our normal consciousness and give us new insights into how to live to maximize our spiritual progress. Our Paramaguru Yogaswami of Jaffna, Sri Lanka, gave us one such gem when he said, "The world is an ashram, a training ground for the achievement of moksha, liberation." Yogaswami's statement has a parallel in William Shakespeare's play As You Like It. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. Here is a paraphrase of Shakespeare's lines adapted to reflect Yogaswami's spiritual meaning. All the world's an ashram, and all the men and women are divine souls. They are spiritually maturing through earthly experiences, and one soul in its time takes many births and thus evolves into oneness with God. Let's look more closely at what it means to say that all the world's an ashram. An ashram, of course, is the residence and teaching center of a swami or spiritual preceptor. It is a place we go to learn about our religion and make spiritual progress. When we go out the door of our home to go to work, school, or elsewhere, do we have in mind that we are going to an ashram? That our actions during the day, in the office, factory, hospital, classroom, or elsewhere, will help us evolve spiritually and bring us closer to moksha? Probably not. When we come home and reflect back on the day, do we feel we made spiritual progress while out of the home? Probably not. Why is this? It is because we have not been trained to look at life in this way. We think of the ashram as a place of spiritual advancement, and we regard the world as a place of mundane tasks and distractions from our spiritual work. The common idea is that what we do in the ashram, the home shrine or the temple, is what brings us spiritual progress, and what we do at the office or in the classroom has nothing to do with our spiritual life. This common perspective is not the viewpoint of great souls such as Yogaswami. Such souls know that much spiritual progress can be made during our time in the world if we hold the right perspective. I call this approach spiritualizing daily life. Let's bring this concept down to earth by dividing the occasions for spiritual progress when out into the world into two categories: facing life's challenges and finding opportunities to serve. First, let's look at facing life's challenges. Life is going to come to you whether you want it to or not. Joyful, easy times, difficult times, happy days and sad, it's all coming. It is there in your karma. It can't help but come, so you don't have to go looking for it. You don't have to go and try and do something different. You can't avoid it. You can't hide from it. Life's challenges will come to us. What is going to happen is going to happen. But where the focus should be for those on the spiritual path is how we respond to these challenges. Why? Because that is where we have a choice. For example, a small infant keeps us awake all night by crying. How do we respond to it? Does it upset us? Do we complain? Or do we just accept it and respond back with lots of love? In every experience of life, we have control over our response. It can be impulsive or thoughtful. It's our choice. When accused of something that we didn't do, how do we respond? When we face challenges at work, say our boss is unfair with us, yells at us, what is our reaction? We want to yell back, but cannot. So do we go home and yell at the spouse? In all such cases, we have choices. It is not the challenges that come, but how we face those challenges that makes the difference. We can react emotionally without thinking about spiritual principles. We can get angry or despondent. We can worry a lot and become irritable. Or we can decide to control any emotional reactions that we might have. We can choose to live without anger. We can choose to cultivate patience. We can choose to be kinder to other people, to be more generous. That is what makes us spiritually stronger. As we curb our instinctive nature, our soul nature shines forth. In other words, if we get angry now and then, let us try and eliminate anger altogether. If we get impatient with people who seem to explain things at great lengths when they could be explained in a short way, let's learn how not to get impatient. Let us learn how to accept that verbosity is their nature. Here is the list of six common challenges we face in life that provide us with good opportunities for spiritual progress if we respond in a wise manner with self-control. First challenge, mistreatment by others. Life provides us a steady stream of experiences in which we are mistreated by others. Rather than retaliate or hold resentment, we can forgive and respond with kindness. Second challenge, our own mistakes. When we make a major error, we have a choice to wallow in self-doubt and self-deprecation or to figure out how to not repeat the mistake. Third challenge, difficult projects. When faced with tasks that stretch our abilities, we can do the minimal just to get by or be inspired to do our best by looking at them as opportunities to improve our concentration, willpower, and steadfastness, all of which will enhance our meditation abilities and inner striving. Fourth challenge, disturbed emotions. When we get upset by life's experiences, we have a choice to suffer the emotional upheaval or to strive to pull ourselves out of it as quickly as possible. Fifth challenge, interpersonal conflicts. When serious disagreements, quarrels, or arguments occur, we have a choice to hold a grudge and perhaps even shun the person, or to resolve the matter and keep the relationship harmonious. Sixth challenge, gossip and backbiting. When those around us indulge in gossip, rumors, scandals, and backbiting, we have a choice to join in or to not participate, and even among those close to us, make it clear that we do not approve. The second category of occasions for spiritual progress when out in the world is what I call finding opportunities to serve. Here is an introduction to this concept from Gurudeva's Living with Shiva, which beautifully illustrates the idea of spiritualizing daily life through service. Go out into the world this week and let your light shine through your kind thoughts. But let each thought manifest itself in a physical deed of doing something for someone else. Lift their burdens just a little bit, and unknowingly perhaps, you may lift something that is burdening your mind. You erase and wipe clean the mirror of your own mind through helping another. We call this karma yoga, the deep practice of unwinding through service the selfish, self-centered, egotistical vasanas, subconscious inclinations of the lower nature that have been generated for many, many lives and which bind the soul in darkness. Through service and kindness, you can unwind the subconscious mind and gain a clear understanding of all laws of life. Your soul will shine forth. You will be that peace. You will radiate that inner happiness and be truly secure simply by practicing being kind in thought, word, and deed. Unquote. There are many opportunities to help others at home, work, school, in the neighborhood, and community. We have developed a list of 6 simple practices. Let me briefly introduce them. First opportunity, seeing God in those we greet. When greeting someone, we strive to look deeply enough into them to see God, to see them as a divine being evolving through experience into oneness with God. Our attitude is then naturally helpful and benevolent. Second opportunity, volunteering. There are many opportunities each day to step forward and offer to help in ways that are beyond what is required of us. An attitude of humble service diminishes the ego and strengthens our spiritual identity. One important spiritual attitude to hold is to be willing to help when called upon, to not resist or refuse, to be as open to helping others as you are in doing things for yourself. Third opportunity, expressing appreciation. We can uplift and encourage others by sincerely expressing how grateful we are for their help, friendship, and importance in our life. Fourth opportunity, helping newcomers. In our modern world, people move around a great deal. Thus, there is a steady flow of newcomers at work, at school, in our neighborhood, and at our temple. Stepping forward to welcome and help orient them to their new environment is an excellent way to be of service. Fifth opportunity, offering hospitality. Everyone can find creative ways to be hospitable in the home, at school, and even at work. Sixth opportunity, making encouraging and complimentary remarks. Make a point to say something encouraging and complimentary to everyone you meet. Their day will be brighter because of it, and so will yours. In conclusion, having a great day needs to mean more than getting a bonus at work or an A on a school test. It should include the spiritual progress you made that day through effectively facing life's challenges and the ways in which you helped and uplifted others. Our list of 12 practices is a good beginning, but hopefully you will keep expanding it as additional insights come from your striving to maximize the spiritual progress you can make from the experiences and opportunities each day brings. Also, parents can teach children to consciously strive for spiritual progress each day at school by facing life's challenges and finding opportunities to serve. So the idea is, as you know, that opportunity is right under our nose, so to speak, and we don't see it, we don't take advantage of it. Because we haven't really thought about it very much, but it's there. And so where this talk came from is the statement, and it was happening about every third family I met in the Gurupitam. Every third family would say the same thing. They'd say, Swami, we don't have any time for our spiritual life. We're so busy with our work obligations, raising our children, this and that. What can we do? You know, when you hear it every third time, you have to be careful not to laugh. You know, here it comes again. You know, I mean, they're totally serious, but say, oh, here we are again. So when you hear something that often, it definitely is a good publisher's desk. It means it's an issue that's on the mind of a lot of people. And so the basic problem is this separation between our normal daily life out in the world and our spiritual life. We think the two have no relationship. But of course they do. And Hinduism doesn't have this distinction between secular and sacred. So it gets around the problem that there's no time to do something spiritual. That's what he's trying to say. It doesn't take any extra time. You're at work already. You're at school already. You know, you're putting in your hours, you know, and you're there. And without taking any extra time, you can do extra actions, or you can react in a different way and make more spiritual opportunities, make more spiritual progress than you would otherwise. It doesn't take any extra time. That's getting around that objection. No one has time for spiritual life. So we're already at school, we're already at work, already at home doing certain chores. So the way we do them can set us back spiritually. We can have no spiritual progress. It can be neutral, or it can advance us spiritually. We have a choice in every action we make by how we do it. If it spiritually puts us backwards, doesn't do anything, or takes us forward. So we might as well go forward, right? Make some good progress. So that's the general idea. And we used it as our teaching on the inner search, and we've gotten some good feedback that certain people have found it very useful in providing concepts for their daily life, certain principles to guide them that they didn't have before, and which they can really see a big difference. So that's nice to see that it worked, and we're continuing to refine the material, develop it into a seminar for use later in the year. So have a wonderful faith. Om Namah Shivaya. Good morning, everyone. Nice to see so many mainland pilgrims here this morning. I have a talk. It's half done, so you get to hear the first half. Called The Soul and Its Maturing Process. Or in the second part, we're trying to develop, based on what Gurudeva says in the trilogy, some clear image of what it means to make spiritual progress. Spiritual evolution, what does it mean? You know, it's pretty vague, right? What is evolving? How is it maturing? You know, so we don't quite have that part yet. It's coming together slowly. But that's the idea, is trying to put a concrete image or multiple images in the mind about what it means to make spiritual progress. Spiritual unfoldment. In Hindu thought, the concept of life and the soul are synonymous. For example, the Sanskrit word jiva refers to both and contains the meanings of individual soul, living being, life, vitality, energy, spirit, and strength. The Tamil word uyir has the same double meaning of life and soul. One of the advantages of this simple explanation of the soul, which equates it with life, is that it makes it easy to experience the soul. How can we do this? Simply look into a mirror. Specifically, look deeply into your eyes and see the light and sparkle within them. That life is your soul, your divinity, the real you, that which continues on after the physical body's passing. We can also become aware of the life within another person and thereby see the soul in him or her as well, and thus acknowledge the person's divine nature. Taking this concept of divinity one step further is the Tamil word uyirkuyir, which is translated as God who is the life of life, the soul of the soul. Another useful phrase that conveys the same meaning is that God is the essence of the soul, meaning if you look deeply enough into the soul, you will experience God. In other words, the life we see in someone is the soul, and the essence or life of that life is God. How do we know when seeing the life within ourselves or others if we are experiencing the individual soul or God as the essence of the soul? The life of life. This is the distinction. When we are perceiving individual souls, there is a sense that every soul is separate from the others. However, when we perceive God as the life of life, the sense of separateness has been replaced with a sense of oneness. Thus, in viewing a group of people, we would be aware of the oneness that pervades them all. My Gurudeva described this in saying, God is the life of our life. Becoming aware of this life energy in all that lives is becoming aware of God's loving presence within us. A simple analogy is to japa beads. We can focus on the beads and see them as 109 separate beads. We can also focus on the cord on which they are strung and see the oneness that pervades all the beads. This deeper experience is achieved through internalizing our awareness, going deeply inside ourselves through worship or meditation. There is a popular story about Paramaguru Yogaswami that illustrates this point. There were four people in his hut. Yogaswami asked, "How many are here?" Someone said four. Yogaswami then said, "No, only one is here." Like four people. Another similar story of Yogaswami is from a devotee who came to visit Swami filled with negative thoughts. The devotee entered the ashram and found Swami happily conversing with his disciples. "I have escaped," thought the devotee, as he worshipped him. Then Swami looked at him with a smile and said, "I know everything from your head to your toes. I know all your thoughts. Not only yours, but everybody's. I am in everybody. You do not know this because of you think You do not know this because you think of yourself as being separate from others. Learn to consider yourself as the same as others and not separate. Then taking the camphor tray that was burning before him, he gave it to his devotee and said, "Take this light and considering everyone here to be Shiva, worship them." The Hindu idea that God is inside of every person as the essence of our soul and can be experienced today is quite different from the concept of Western religions that God is in heaven and therefore not able to be experienced by those living on earth. Gurudeva often spoke of this immediacy of God's presence. God Shiva is so close to us. He is closer than our breathing, nearer to us than our hands or feet. Yes, he is the very essence of our soul. Let's turn now to the Hindu concept of the purpose of life. As we know, the Hindu perspective is that the purpose of life is to make spiritual progress, to have deeper and deeper realizations of God, which eventually result in moksha, liberation from rebirth on the planet Earth. Let's ask the question, what is it that makes this spiritual progress? It is, of course, the soul. In thinking of spiritual progress, it is helpful to understand the concept of the soul not just as life and light, but as a human-like, self-effulgent form comprised of this life and light we previously talked about. The soul body is referred to in Sanskrit as the Anandamaya Kosha, as well as the Karana Sharira. Just as our physical body matures from being an infant to being an adult, so does our soul body mature from ignorance of God to intimate communion with God. In Sanskrit, this is called Adhyatma Prasara, spiritual evolution, and of course is a process that takes place over a number of lifetimes, not just one. Gurudeva gives us an insightful description of this process. The soul form evolves as its consciousness evolves, becoming more and more refined. The experiences of life and all the various planes of consciousness are food for the soul, reaping lessons that actually raise the level of intelligence and divine love. Thus, very refined souls, whether embodied or in the disembodied ajiva state, are like walking intelligences with inventive creativeness and power of preservations, beaming with love and luminosity in their self-effulgent bodies of quantum-like particles. It's as far as we've gotten. We've encountered an interesting tree in New Zealand, kauri tree, and I'm thinking of bringing it into the description somehow. It's a pine tree, and it lives to be over 2,000 years old. Imagine that. The maturing process of this tree is 2,000 years. So Europeans came into New Zealand and cut most of them down, a bit short-sighted, you know, not realizing it might take a while for them to grow back. About 1,000 years, to be precise. What was the one we saw? How old was it? 800 years old. Yes, we saw one tree, about 70 feet tall or so. About 70 feet tall. It took 800 years for it to grow, just to be 70 feet tall. So 12 feet in diameter. So I'm thinking of putting that in, perhaps. But it gives you a sense, you know, if you just simple division, 2,100 divided by 70 years, about 30 lifetimes, 30 human lifetimes would be the length of time this tree is living. So it gives us some sense. It's falling off?
Yeah.
Feels like it's falling off. I move my head too much. But the other image I'm working on is unfoldment. Gurudeva uses the example of the lotus flower, how It's a gradual process. The lotus flower coming up, producing a bud, and that bud gradually blossoming. So, because one of the points Gurudeva makes is spiritual unfoldment is gradual. You know, it's like this 2,000-year-old tree. It's a gradual process. It's not a rapid process. And, of course, in Western thinking, and Western thinking is permeating more and more of the East these days as well, almost global thinking, we're in a hurry. We're in a rush. Have to do everything quickly, including unfold spiritually. So the idea of 30 lifetimes seems too long, right? 30 years? That seems too long. 30 hours? Well, I'd probably manage of that. I'm willing to meditate for 30 hours if I can achieve realization, enlightenment. That's a reasonable amount of time. So, of course, it doesn't work that way. That's the point we want to put in. It's like, you know, those of you who have raised children, you know, it's... You want the child to mature more quickly than it is, perhaps, but it doesn't help. It takes time to learn to walk, to learn to talk, to learn to do everything, and just have to relax into the process of how fast the child is maturing and enjoy it. So similarly, we can do the same thing with our own spiritual unfoldment. It's just relax into the process, not try and rush the process, but enjoy the process as we go along. And that's Gurudeva's idea, that life is meant to be lived joyously. Doesn't mean that we don't have challenging days when we're not joyous, but it means, you know, that's what we're trying to achieve, is a joyous approach to what we have to do, to our duties in life, to our duties at home, duties at work, duties in the community. Try and do them all in a joyous spirit and enjoy the process and not feel burdened by the process as much as possible. So I look forward to reading the ending myself. See how it turns out. Looking through the entire trilogy to see what's there. And amazing, some of the images you forget are in there. One about an elevator, which may work. Elevator is being compared to the chakras. So we take a building, say a seven-story building above ground, which is an elevator in it, and has seven stories below the ground for parking. And so, of course, each story or level is a chakra. And Gurudeva says all the chakras are always active. So it's like, you know, those 14 stories are always there. You know, and the lights are on and so forth. You know, it's a functioning level of a building. Regardless if anybody's in that level of the building or not, it's functioning. So the analogy is, regardless of where our awareness is in the 14 chakras, they're all still there. You know, they're all turned on. But it's our presence in them, utilizing the faculties of that chakra, that bring it into the forefront of our consciousness. So Gurudeva says most people live in around three stories or three chakras that are adjacent to one another in the chakras. So lots of people live in memory, reason, and then below memory is fear. So once in a while they'll get fearful. And memory and reason is a normal state, but once in a while they get fearful. Likewise, some people live in memory and reason and sometimes get down to anger. Or some people live in anger and sometimes come up to fear. Gurudeva says, for some people, fear is their highest state of consciousness. My goodness. So, interesting analogy. I think it has potential. And the other interesting statement I came across was that spiritual unfoldment isn't so much being in the higher seven chakras, it's closing off the lower seven. It's not going there. But that is really the crucial part of making spiritual progress. In other words, we don't get down into fear, anger, jealousy, retaliation, malice, hatred, so forth, murder. We don't go there. You know, it's closing that off, which, or staying above it, that is the crucial part of making spiritual progress. So that's why in Hinduism, avoiding violence, nonviolence in thought, word, and deed is so important, because that's a sure way to get down there, is even just violent words will put you down in those lower chakras and basically inhibit or your spiritual progress. There's another analogy to spiritual progress, which is the bathtub analogy. So, you know, your bathtub is very crucial that you put in the stopper, right? Otherwise, nothing happens. So the stopper's there, and the stopper is like the entrance. It's like sealing off the lower chakras, you know, if you put the stopper there. So you're doing all your sadhanas, all your spiritual practices, which is like filling up the tub with water. But then if you allow yourself to get seriously angry, it's like taking out the stopper, and of course what happens? All the water drains out. So obviously the spiritual progress that you made is lost. So you can see why Gurudeva says the key to making spiritual progress is sealing off these lower emotions, because otherwise we're filling up the tub and we're emptying it, we're filling up the tub, we're emptying it. We're never overflowing the tub. You know, it never gets that full, because we're always falling back into one or more lower emotions. So that's the idea. We can all look forward to the end, including me, see how it works out. Have a great day, have a great phase. Om Namah Shivaya. Om.